And welcome back to Coast with Linda Moulton Howe with us. Next up, Conversations with Linda, right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Linda Moulton Howe with us. Linda, anything new in the crop formation world?
Well, there is still winter in the Northern Hemisphere. So until we get to April, there won't be any rapeseed to start with the formations, followed by barley and then wheat. You know, it evolves April, May, June into August. So that's the season in the Northern Hemisphere when there are crops for formations to be in.
Well, that's true, too. But once things warm up, are you expecting another flurry of messages?
Well, flurry of messages. I guess that the crop formations, in my mind, that they could possibly be something that I heard in 1992, markers in timelines by time travelers. So that would mean that they never were intended to be messages for humans ever. And speaking of that, the whole idea that in the last couple of years, well, going back actually to 2007 when those dragonfly drones showed up and they had the symbols on underneath the tails of some of them, and I started working on doing presentations about the self-activating technology, extraterrestrial, that symbols put on surfaces that had certain code embedded in them, mathematical language, when put in a certain frequency or field, would become self-activating machines with self-activating technology. And one of the issues was, could crop formations in the skin of the Earth be functioning as self-activating software on this planet for reasons unknown? Well, in going into the Eisenhower briefing again, in doing the editing and the work on with Bob and with Stan, in one of the paragraphs in page 4 of the Eisenhower briefing, it says, numerous examples of what appear to be a form of writing were found in the wreckage. Efforts to decipher these have remained largely unsuccessful. I think that that's what this is about. These are the same kind of symbols that are on the dragonfly drones that relate to self-activating technology using self-activating software, and that somehow the crop formations, the symbols on what was there in the 40s, and what we're dealing with has the ability to have all kinds of technology and machinery that don't need the prime intelligence to be in them, that they have the ability to make drones, the word we use today, and hybrids and clone beings, while the prime intelligence behind all of this could be in another solar system in another galaxy. And I think that's how big this story is and why crop formations are so mysterious, genuinely, regardless of some of the people in England who have maybe been working for counterintelligence, who go out and make crop formations and muddy the water so everybody thinks that they're a man-made phenomena. The original 1989, 90, 91, that modern age, I got there for the first time in 92. It was so profound what we were all experiencing, and you look back at those beginning of the crop formations, and that man who said that our government was looking at crop formations as possible markers in timelines that were being manipulated by other intelligences makes as much sense to me as self-activating software.
Good point. Let's go to the phones now, Linda. Jerry's in Oklahoma City. Jerry, you're on with Linda Moulton now on Coast to Coast.
Well, I'm honored to be first tonight.
Thank you.
Perfect.
One of the things I wanted to suggest when Linda was talking about the her first report regarding booms and so forth, I would ask that she review James's interview from last night, because remember how he had mentioned how a couple of we had lost those airplanes, caused it on that. So I'd ask that she review that. But review that interview.
Okay.
But the point is that I'm calling to put a little more validity to what you had other stuff. In my Air Force career, I was briefed by a coworker, and when in turn he stated in a previous job how he had been trained to work on high technology, including our fleet of UFOs, as well as, you know, and then I asked one of the things I asked him was, well, if we've got aliens, you know, how much involvement do we have? And, I mean, is there much validity to that? And his answer was, well, we are under treaty with five different species, and not all of them are nice. Some are nice and some are not. You know, some treat us well and some treat us not so well. And I thought that that might throw a little bit of a concept on it. And when your Navy gentleman had mentioned, you know, that he had saw these, you know, shiny UFOs over the mountains, I mean, if you're going to do training, and how his point where he said that it seemed like fighter training, which that does work in line with my career, seeing that in turn, if you're going to do training on UFOs that you're trying to get to understand how to operate, where's a better place to train than over a territory that no one's watching?
But I don't think they were human at all. The whole point of his experience there is that the scientists who disappeared and came back afraid, and all of the other scuttlebutt that various flight crews were told, or the implication was that extraterrestrial biological entities had bases in the Antarctic, and that in one of those installations there were human scientists working with them underground. And there have been those stories about Dulce and about Area 51 and various places around the world where the truth is that there has been collaboration. And I think it's interesting that you use the number five. That fits in with the alleged Ronald Reagan briefing at Camp David in the very beginning of his administration, that was supposed to have laid out that the United States had some sort of a working relationship or knowledge of five different types, and that one of them was considered to be hostile, of an insect nature, and that the other four really broke down into tall pales and some form of gray or something like that, because the other two had been clones or hybrids made by these other types. And that what is becoming clearer and clearer in the work of Anthony Sanchez and Helen Luttrell and others that are working on the hybrid clone question is that we're dealing with extraterrestrials who apparently can gather genetic material and then make any kind of a container that they want to put life in. That's a whole new definition for extraterrestrial biological entity. They don't have to necessarily be the prime intelligence that makes the containers. The containers and the self-activating technologies themselves can be here on Earth or Mars or another planet someplace else in the universe doing work for something that could be on a solar system in a different galaxy. That is what I think is beginning to emerge as a possibility in how complex the interaction is between the different types of intelligences and this planet, and that not everything is peaceful, and that the non-humans themselves, I think, have conflicts. But I think that we are at a crossroads here where as I said to Ryan, isn't it the right thing to do now, as we are heading into the middle of the 21st century, to pull the Band-Aid off, or the scab of all of the lies and policies of denial, and just get on with telling the whole planet the truth so all of us could be involved in trying to analyze our past, our present, and our future in the context of other humans that have been involved with this planet for, as I understand, for millions of years?
Linda, these loud booms that people are hearing, what have we ruled out? Have we ruled anything out, like underground construction, things like that?
George, just in pure, simple logic, how would some machine underground be heard by people in five counties in Georgia all at the same time?
It better be a big underground facility.
Well, but you can understand, when I ask the question, you suddenly see how illogical.
I know. It's got to be something else.
Yeah. And if, going back to that interview I did back in June of 2013 with the geophysicist at Stanford University, Ariana Gleason, she had a report in one of the science journals about new data suggesting that it's either the inner or the outer core or a combination of the two in this Earth are changing. And the chicken and egg question is, what would make them change? And could the change be related to the fact that maybe the Earth finally, after 786,000 years, is getting ready to change the North and South magnetic poles? And that change could explain why there has been this rapid weakening. It is definitely not as weak as it may have been at some other times historically, but the very fact that it weakened so rapidly, the magnetic field in January to June of 2014, might be related to what's going on in the core. Now, could all of this translate into boom sounds, certainly in the Northern Hemisphere, but other parts of the planet? Nobody knows.
Nobody knows.
And in that interview that I did with Ariana Gleason, I asked her if it were possible, the physics, that you could have changes in the inner core that would go through the mantle, out to the crust, up to the ionosphere, and then bounce back as infrasound that you could not hear with the human ear, and then bounce back into a tight, focused house or neighborhood and be heard as a huge boom. And she did not rule it completely out, and I've talked with other geophysicists. We're in new territory because nobody has any experience.
No, nobody's done this before.
786,000 years ago. And now we could be, for the rest of this century, experiencing all kinds of bizarre things if the magnetic field continues to weaken and then strengthen, weaken and strengthen. And that is one of the big unknowns now. But the boom started, as far as my reporting goes, in 2011. So we have had 4 years of this. And what has not occurred in the previous 4 years that did as we hit January 1st of 2015 is that there were simultaneous booms being reported to police, fire, social media, television stations, in the same 24-hour period, as far apart as Luzerne County in Pennsylvania, in Rhode Island. And when you go and look at the map and you go through Earth Files, I'm in my seventh story on this tonight, you see that the booms are affecting much larger geographic areas at the same time.
Right.
Where it was earlier a house or a neighborhood. And if you look at the last, going in now, starting the fifth year, if there was one thing that has stood out to me right now in just this month, has been the intensity of so many booms being heard by so many people in so many different states. It means that the geography is now bigger. The intensity of the boom seemed to be greater. And you might even ask, is it something that is getting closer, if that is a word to use, and that something about the energy of it is increasing? And it's also, this is worth pointing out again, in the vast majority of all of the reported boom events in the last four, now starting fifth year, that have gone to police and to fire and to emergency management. And when they have gone to the United States Geological Service and said, is there seismic data that goes with these booms? The answer has largely been no. And that's why people looked to the skies. Well, suddenly, in January of 2015, we have this issue in Connecticut, in Plainfield, where starting in December with one and maybe another one in October that nobody realized would lead up to this pattern, come a dozen, up to 3.1 was the largest magnitude. These are small-scale swarms. But there have been small-scale seismic swarms, mysterious, where? Dallas, Texas, via Nevada, Oklahoma, Norma, and now we've got them in Plainfield, Connecticut, and there has never been in western Connecticut a recorded seismic event since 1638. So this is truly outstanding. And what is the relationship between whatever the energy is behind all of this, that it is not causing earthquakes in all the other states, but suddenly come these unprecedented, enigmatic, this quake swarm in a part of Connecticut where there's not been any seismic activity before? And what did people hear and report? Explosive booms. The geophysicist says it's because these were very shallow, 1 to 2 miles. Well, why were there booms in 14 other states without any U.S. Geological Survey data? And I think once you begin looking at the facts and you stand back, you say, this is really bizarre. It's consistent only in the contradictions.
Yeah, I hope the planet's not in the early stages of blowing up, as some people have theorized, Linda.
No, I do not think this planet is going to blow up. But I think it is way overdue for the North and the South Pole to change, as they have done hundreds of times in the past, and none of us know what it's going to be like when that happens, because the magnetic fields are so key to the navigation of birds and marine life.
That's right.
And we don't know how this is going to play out.
We're going to come back in a moment with Linda Moulton Howe. We're going to take all the rest of the calls. Those of you on hold, just hang right there. We will get you when we come back. Also, don't forget now to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. It's no effort. Just simply go to coasttocoastam.com. In the far right-hand corner, look for the icons and click them, and then you're part of it. And also, you should be getting our free electronic newsletter. Sign up for that. You can get that at coasttocoastam.com as well. And also, if you need to email me, george@coasttocoastam.com. On our next Coast to Coast program, of course, it's Friday night into Saturday morning open line, so make sure you're part of it. We're going to come back and take the final calls with Linda, too, when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back, Linda Moulton Howe. Let's go right to the phones now. We go to Racine, Wisconsin. Timmy's with us. Hey, Tim, go ahead.
How are you doing, George and Linda?
Good, Tim.
Hi.
That's good. Hey, I've got my eyes in the sky looking for whatever. But,
keep
hey,
looking.
I was in, like... The first caller has kind of hit what I was going to say. Maybe Planet X has to do something with these noises. I was just thinking that, just trying to put it together, you know, because it sounds like that kind of. Because, you know, if the planets, if there's another planet, it could affect our, it could affect everything.
Well, one of the things that I hope everybody will get in their mind's eye, the idea of how far we're talking about when we go out to the Oort cloud and the Kuiper Belt, it is the idea that there could be even a, we'll say, a planet, and I think one of the speculations recently having to do with perturbations of comets out in the Oort cloud is that there might be a body out there 8 to 10 times the size of the Earth. Well, the Oort cloud, I know that there is a section where there is one body. It's a quarter of a light year from here. So there's not going to be any impact of any, we'll call it direct physical sound or anything, on the inner solar system or even the solar system where the planets are. So whatever this is that might be causing perturbations in the orbits of the comets, in your mind's eye, think of the solar system and then go way, way out, a quarter of a light year. And then you're into the area where there might be some more of these icy bodies that might have very, very long looped some kind of an orbit. But I took the question to astronomers probably 10, 15 years ago, are there any pieces of evidence on the planet that say take Zechariah Sitchin's idea that there's a Nibiru and that it has an orbit every 3,300 or 3,600 years in the solar system and that there were beings living on it that were responsible for the Anunnaki in Sumeria. And the interesting thing is that there is an astronomer in Ireland who has tried very hard to see if he could find anything that matches, that not denying anything about the Anunnaki cuneiform, talking about possibly that there is an orbit of something. And they can't find anything that would match that kind of cycle. And we know that whatever could be out there in the Oort cloud, so, so far away, that if it even had some kind of a long loop, that it is not something that would make sense that something would be living on it in a long orbit out in the Oort cloud. So I would say right now that the idea of these headlines about some possible, maybe there is a brown dwarf that was a sun, maybe the whole solar system was supposed to be a binary star system, and that one of the suns never ignited, and that might be the brown dwarf. That might be what they're talking about out there in the Oort cloud, and that we are in a time where these sounds are something that seem to be focused in or around our planet Earth, which is 93 million miles from the sun, not a quarter of a light year. And I hope this helps put into perspective that we're in a solar system that has the sun, has inner planets, then it has the outer gaseous planets, and then it keeps going on into the Kuiper Belt and the Oort cloud where the comets come from, and that would not relate to these booms on the Earth now.
Have you noticed, Linda, how Yahoo is putting out a lot of interesting stories about Bigfoot, Mars, anomalies there? I mean, they really seem to be getting into this.
Well, don't you think it's because the public is so interested in the Earth mysteries? So I think that's what drives it. I find that I've always had kind of an enthusiasm for the fact that there really are a lot of people who don't buy all the denials, and they know that there's something else going on in this planet. And so people really are seeking out this information. And finally, perhaps a website like a Yahoo is saying, well, I think what we ought to try to do is report facts. And I know that's what I've tried to do in my whole career, and I think that's what people are hungry for.
They sure are. Let's go back to the calls. Ann is in Mount Vernon, Washington. That's west of the Rockies, of course. Hello, Ann.
Hi, how are you doing there?
We're fine. I hope you are, too.
Well, I always make it somehow.
Well, that's good.
I wanted to tell Linda that I just love listening to her. She's one of my very favorites when she's on, and one night a fellow called, Linda, one night a fellow called, and I think it was very late for him, or he just got up from night shift or whatever. he called you Linda Mountain Ho, and I thought that was not really quite the respect you deserved.
I don't remember.
I don't remember that either, Linda.
So maybe
it was a long time ago, and, you know,
must have been in another world.
Very flattering.
Okay, yeah, your phone's speaking of flattering. Your phone is muddy.
An accent. It could have been something that was more innocent. But since we have this pause here, I really would like to extend to the Coast audience a request for anybody out there who has any information about anything that I've reported tonight. Especially people who may have firsthand knowledge and they are beginning to realize that the wave is coming in the direction of telling the truth, to get in touch with me at my email, which is earthfiles@earthfiles.com. Always think of a reporter who files news about the earth. And I have been finding an increasing value in the Earth Files Facebook, that so many people are connected in social media now, and that stories that are not even making local media sometimes make social media. And so I would like everybody to know that at www.earthfiles.com in the upper right hand is the link to the Earth Files Facebook, and that I encourage people to use that to reach me about strange things that are happening in your community. So Earth Files Facebook and earthfiles.com and earthfiles@earthfiles.com.
Steve in Ocean City, Maryland. Hello, Steve. Good morning to you.
Hey, good show tonight. It's great to hear you guys again. And I was wondering what you think about the in Maryland, the sonic booms have been and stuff have been about maybe once every other month. There have been three or four media reports in the last year. The very first one, I think last January, the military took responsibility for and did some interviews. But simultaneously, Maryland and Washington, D.C. are getting slammed with the geoengineering contrail project. And
yeah.
I'm wondering if you think there's any connection with the UFO phenomenon.
You mean you're asking if you think that the chemtrail lines in the sky are connected to the UFOs?
Well, simultaneously, all three of these things, there's more and more. There's more. Peter Davenport's website, you'll see that the Maryland coast is just quadrupled with UFO sightings, and all of this stuff just seems to be happening at the same time, more and more all the time.
Well, if you jump back to 1996, that was the year that all of the chemtrails started being photographed for the first time, and they were very clear crosshatches. Jim Mars and I watched a big silver plane at a conference start in a pure blue Sedona sky, doing a white line and then another white line, and pretty soon it was like we were looking at some sort of a plaid in the perfect Sedona sky, and the sky turned white. That was 1996. And that was also the year that silver disks were videotaped by two or three people moving in and around the, we'll call it the white discharge from these big silver planes. And I remember it so distinctly. And no one knew then, in 1996, were the silver craft investigating and examining what was coming out of these big planes, because they didn't know, or was there some collaboration? And as the decade unfolded into the 2000s, there have definitely been parts of the country where the crosshatching that turns into a white sky has happened more frequently in some areas than others. But I would say that in Albuquerque, it's the opposite. I don't think that there has been much activity like that since I moved here in the last 10 years, where once upon a time I think it was. And so some parts of the country seem to have the lines and others not. So you can't say it is an overall increasing activity, because when you go back to 1996, it was really intense.
Pete in Pittsburgh. Hello, Pete. Thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Thank you, George. Linda, it's an honor. I'm sure you're familiar with Carla Turner.
Oh, yeah. Carla.
She wrote the book Into the Fringe, and I've been seeing some videos on her on YouTube recently. My question is to you. You kind of remind me of her a little bit. There's a conspiracy over her death. People believe someone wanted to shut her up, and they did it. A, do you know what happened to her in her death? And B, have you ever been tried? Has anyone tried to silence your voice?
Ooh.
And do you ever worry about someone possibly silencing you?
Close to a nerve on that one, Linda.
Well, I have been threatened more than once. Carla, as far as I know, died of cancer. I know that she was worried about what the agendas of the non-humans were in relationship to the evolution of humans. And the problem is that all of us are lacking the hard data that our government might know about which types have which agendas and whether or not there is any effort to shut some of us down or hurt us. The government certainly, I think, one of the ugly underbellies is that to carry out the policies of denial from the Truman administration that we've talked about earlier tonight, I think that there were people who were murdered. And I think they ranged largely in the science and military areas. So today, we're in kind of 2015, getting to the middle of the 21st century, looking back at the 1940s and World War II, it seems like we have come so far, and a lot of us have learned so much from people who have talked with us on or off the record, that it hardly seems possible that we're still living on a planet in which the vast majority of people have deliberately been denied the truth. And that is what goes to the heart of what happened to Carla. As far as I know, she had cancer. The question in cancer is always, where does it come from?
Yeah.
And she was young, and she had been reporting some of the more difficult, unvarnished aspects of a phenomena that in some ways seems to me to have Earth's best interests at heart and others that do not. Or maybe I should put it this way, that there may be self-serving intelligences that don't care what happens to us, but they do care about this planet.
Let's take another call or two. We got, let's see, how about Paul in Rome, Georgia? That's what we've got. Hey, Paul, go ahead.
Good morning, George, Linda.
Morning.
I just have a question, man. You say you mapped out these booms. Has anybody took a map of the booms and checked a map of all the fracking fields to see if there's any correlation between those two?
Oh, yeah, fracking.
Thank you.
Fracking, George, that goes to the heart of one of your questions. That is one thing that's been eliminated in many of these places.
Yeah.
No fracking. And so that has been one of the puzzles in the Dallas quake swarm. They outlawed in this area where they've been having the quake swarms in the Dallas area, they outlawed fracking, 2010. And so what is very interesting to me, because I'm getting a constant river of information coming from all of the states, it seems like, about something, is that there are scientists that are studying right now via Nevada, that quake swarm that I reported about in the last two or three months. It's still going off and on, off and on. The Dallas quake swarm that showed up in January, mysterious. Norman, Oklahoma, another quake swarm, and there the Oklahoma Geological Survey was able to confirm there was no seismic data. And yet, that they had booms, but they had no seismic data. So they were having booms during one period, and then they've had the seismic swarms before in the last 2 or 3 years. So suddenly they had booms without any seismic data, and that's why Austin Holland, who is the director of the Oklahoma Geological Survey, told Associated Press, we don't have any seismic data on this now. So whatever is causing these huge booms, January 8th and 9th, it has to be coming from the atmosphere. And then comes also in that period between the 8th and the 15th of January, out in Plainfield, Connecticut, the seismic swarm of about a dozen in a place where there has not been one single recorded seismic shock of any kind for 300 and some years.
It's an amazing story, Linda. Linda, we're almost out of time. Earthfiles.com, that's the website. You still take emails at earthfiles@earthfiles.com. I may or may not be at the Ozark Conference this year. I'm not sure, but if I am, let's get together, okay?
All right, and for sure at Contact in the Desert.
Yes, I will be there for sure. Thank you so much. Linda Moulton-Howe, our investigative reporter. She reports once a month and covers these stories of high strangeness, and they are absolutely riveting. These booms around 12 to 14 states, wow. Riveting. I don't know what they are. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borles, George Knapp, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.